For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, I'm Matt Leib.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself the Wire.
The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire.
And talk about it. Yep.
All right. So excited for everyone to join. For those of you on the Patreon, patreon.com/frogcast, you probably noticed this episode is late. Sorry. We were supposed to record last week, but then Matt Leib here got strep throat, streptococcus in my throat.
Mm.
And so we're late, and I'm sorry, but you know, my baby is a petri dish of diseases. And so I think it's because she likes to, after a bath, she picks on my toothbrush and she puts it in her mouth. And that's just disgusting because her mouth is filled with doo-doo, I think.
Yeah.
She got a doo-doo mouth. But we're here and we're alive.
All the kids do. They got that doo-doo mouth.
They got that doo-doo
mouth. It's called a doo-doo mouth. And your kids
could be doo-dooing it. We both had fun with that. March 17th. Sunday, March 17th, Matt Leib, Francesca Fiorentini, my wife. We're going to be headlining the Sacramento Punchline. Please buy tickets. The link is in the fucking description.
Just please sell it out so he doesn't have to talk about it anymore.
I know. I'm sorry. But, you know, pluggies. 5 stars in review. Anyways, are you ready? Because today we're going to be talking about, guess what? The Wire.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about...
For real?
Yeah. I know. It's crazy. But from season 5 of The Wire, episode 4, Transitions. And our guest today is a returning Pod Yourself champion. You have heard her talking about Sopranos. You heard her talking about Wires. And now you're going to hear her once again talking about Wires. Stand-up comedian extraordinaire Katrina Davis is back.
Hello.
Yay. Round of applause. How you doing?
Good. So good to be back.
Yeah.
So upset by this show still.
This was a great show.
Extra upsetting episode. It's got to be said.
Is it a specifically upsetting episode?
Yeah. I was wondering while I was watching if you all picked this particular era for me on purpose, because I haven't watched that much since the last episode, so I just jumped back in like at the beginning of this season and watched up to this and was like, what is going on? Like, Ish yes. got so crazy in 3 years. Like,
yeah, just I love that. I forget that for some people, when we're asking them to come on to talk season 5, they're like, I've been a while since I watched it, and what happened to this show?
I didn't know it became reverse death. Dexter, what is happening?
Yes, it did. And you know what? On this podcast, we are vehement defenders of that. We think it's a great idea, and they should have done more fake serial killers.
Oh my gosh.
But I want to ask you about it. Now, you've seen The Wire before, is that right?
Yes.
Do you remember this season at all? Like your first rewatch? Is this your first rewatch of this season? Or
yes, like yeah. This watching this season was like I hadn't watched it before, basically. Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember how you felt the first time you watched season 5?
Yes, because yeah. I love Omar.
Mm.
So there was a lot of like bittersweet
yeah.
parts of this episode too for me. I just like, yeah.
Yeah.
One of my notes is just Team Omar forever. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. Were you, because like many people that we talked to, this is the season for them that they are confident in saying is the worst season. Do you think this is the worst season of The Wire?
Ooh. Hmm. Here's the thing. I don't know if it's the worst, but I could also see people like comparing it to when The Office should have stopped but didn't. And yeah. then they did that next season and it was like cameos and stuff. And yeah. you were like, what are we doing? And then they kind of like kind of pulled it out of a nosedive. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like we as like American TV makers in general will never cut and run if something is making money for the sake of yeah. the story.
Yes. No.
So like the odds of a show that people are in love with and that like kind of like going downward at the same time that the story would naturally end mm-hmm. like doesn't ever seem to happen. So they always either seem to like, we seem to not get enough of stuff we're in love with,
right?
Or way too much of stuff that we did love and we're like, why did you make me hate this?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this it's a good comparison because, you know, I mean,
both like if the Wire was more popular, who knows, there could be like five more seasons and then like a Nikki Haley cameo, like who knows what they would have done with it.
Like God. SNL.
Yeah, yeah. let's bring her on.
Yeah. Huh? That'll be weird. Fun.
What if we had somebody impersonating the person and then the person came up and snuck up behind them? What? Yeah.
You know what I love about SNL? SNL is a show that's not afraid to normalize people who want significant portions of the United States public to be dead. And I feel like that is brave mm-hmm. and I don't know, just charming, you know? It's like, wouldn't it be funny if like Hitler showed up and said, sock it to me, yeah. you know?
And he was giving like mustache tips to a guy yeah, who was yeah. doing a fake yeah. Hitler mustache.
I have one question. So you say some things about the Jews, right? It's a joke because I'm Hitler. Yeah, no. It's...
I heard the audience like applause break in my head when you started speaking. And fake Hitler's voice when they're like, it like the camera turns and they're like, shut up, they got Hitler.
Yeah, I can't believe
he's here.
Came. You know, that's kind of cool of Hitler to like show up. Yeah, and like,
you I don't like just, him before, but like, he's
just
right.
to like poke pretty, fun at himself.
Yeah, yeah, he's knows, a good sport.
He's a good sport, and like, you know, he understands that he's a public figure, and sometimes you gotta make fun of yourself. I kind of like this Hitler guy.
So upsetting.
He's cool. But this is not a show about Hitler. No. Yet. This is a show about The Wire, and we cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
When you pause. Through the garden, gotta pause. Your back. Well, I beg your
pardon. Podcast.
Track. If you
podcast.
With Jesus, he's gonna say
the newsroom.
Gotta keep a
fake serial killer. Pod.
Down in the hole.
Season 5.
Oh, right.
Pod yourself with Jesus sounds
yeah,
like the
if you
next
pod
wave.
With Jesus. I want to pod with Jesus.
That sounds like the next wave of the campaigns from the Super Bowl. Is, but somehow.
God. What if we did like a true crime show where you were Jesus and I told you about like famous murders, historical murders, and you were like, just what? Going, no way.
Oh, my dad. That's crazy.
Oh, my dad.
It's either that.
And then at the end of every episode, he's just like, I think we should forgive him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, well, you know, I just turn the other cheek. That's what I say. I mean, honestly, if Jesus started a podcast, we would go Joe Rogan so fast. And it's unfortunate, but he would be like... You know, he'd be selling like brain juice, and he's just like, "Do you want to have high octane Jesus brain? Drink these
raw olive oil."
Yeah, raw olive oil and fucking bull semen cocktails. Okay, today we're going to be talking about once again season 5.
My flesh energy drink. Sorry, go ahead.
Season 5, episode 4, Transitions, and this came out on January 27, 2008. Vince, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
This is the IMDb written synopsis. It's a little weird. Campbell tries to smooth out the transitions in the police department. The newspaper scrambles to confirm surprising news from City Hall, but lose out to the TV media in scooping a high-profile grand jury appearance.
Okay.
That's very weird. How many times have we heard Nerys Campbell called Campbell, number one? Like, I had to look up who Campbell even was, because she's Nerys this whole
series. She's Nerys. She ain't Campbell.
She's the only character name in that synopsis. Anyway, it's a weird synopsis, but that's okay.
Very strange.
We're moving on.
We're moving on, but what happened?
Yeah. I think what you're trying to say is that we cannot evaluate art divorced from its cultural context. Divorced from its cultural context.
You got it the first time.
We did it. We got to put some of that context back in. And we do that with a little something that we like to call the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day machine tells the tale, son.
That's right. Today, we're taking it all the way back to January 27th, 2008. Almost however many years that is to the day. We're only like a few weeks removed from that. Some of the things that were happening.
I'm going to do the math. 16.
No.
Fuck.
You look like you're pooping and you still got it wrong.
Yeah. Wait, no, but it's a 24, four, and then minus
16. He broke eye contact with everyone to do that.
16. I'm right.
Yeah, I think that's right. Some of the things that were happening back then, Obama wins the South Carolina primary. Headline in the New York Times, Obama wins South Carolina backed by whites and blacks. And then
both of them?
In 2008, it was still just us, just whites and blacks. Yeah, that's all right. We got. Yeah.
That was every type of guy.
That was the two kinds of people that made Obama like Obama.
Yeah, that's half of him each.
He's still behind in the delegate count, 249 to 167, but he's coming on strong. We got an article in the UK Independent. With Bill Clinton on top. Killer Bill is the headline. Earlier in the race, Mr. Clinton had tried, not always successfully, to avoid outshining Hillary. But in South Carolina, he took center stage. Mrs. Clinton spent much of her time focusing elsewhere on the contest to come. Her husband was left behind to take the shine off of Obama's campaign.
Hey, what are you doing? That's my fucking wife. I got my dick sucked. In the Oval Office. You owe her this, America.
And he did
straight
so
up got sucked off. Famously had cum saved on a dress.
He did so to such effect that he could play a central role in the rest of the election battle. Resorting to the sort of dog whistle politics that Republicans have often used to smear black opponents without directly going on the attack, he accused the Obama camp last week of a hit job and of playing the race card to win in South Carolina.
Unlike me, who has never once played a race card. Nope.
Plays a saxophone.
A saxophone. I smoke weed and I play sax. Anyways, how you doing, Arsenio? This guy.
On Monday evening, Hillary Clinton set the tone at a televised debate in Myrtle Beach. In a few sharp exchanges, she telegraphed to viewers that Mr. Obama was just another sleazy black politician in a sharp suit. I don't think she said that. I don't know if you could just write that.
Did you just write a quote? Wait a minute. Yeah.
For all his uplifting rhetoric, she said, he winked at legislation to allow sex shops near schools, consorted with a slum landlord, didn't oppose the war in Iraq when it really mattered, and in the greatest heresy for Democrats, admired Ronald Reagan. It was a breathtaking assault.
I'm sorry, but did Hillary Clinton just say that Obama is the one who supported the war in Iraq? Like,
when
she was in the Senate.
Something about he did it at the wrong time in the wrong way. I don't know. Yeah. Revisionist. You know?
Everything you can say about Obama, just like compared to Hillary Clinton on that, that's crazy. I remember, obviously, this election very well. Mm-hmm. And I do remember like some of Hillary's attacks, but mostly I remember like the strategy was just she was going to cry every once in a while and be like, you know, I'm a woman, though. It was like her thing was like, you know, I just, you could have your first woman president. And that's more important than. Yeah.
Well, she's like, I did all the things you told. I did all the sacrifices that you told me to do. I pretended to bake cookies. Yeah. I looked the other way with the blowjob stuff. Like, what? This is what I'm here for. What do you? Why?
Yeah,
this
I
is
think
mine.
That was. I mean, even just culturally in America, we should all know that Hillary wasn't hot enough for crying to work. I don't know why.
Yeah,
that would have ever been a tactic. Just yeah. In America. But also, I know, not to say there aren't black voters in South Carolina, but I don't think I've ever heard identifying as black as something to help you win anything in South Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the idea that it's just like, you know.
He won in South Carolina. No fair. He's black. Wait a minute.
That's
what?
Not fair.
Yeah. They always get an easy time of it in South Carolina.
Carolina.
If there's one thing South Carolina is famous for, love of the blacks.
In high leadership positions.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
All right, so another one to bring you back. You know, we talked about steroids in baseball and some
yes,
of our. It was a hot topic at the time. I don't know why.
Barry, the circumference of Barry Bonds' head.
Bigger,
around that time.
Yeah. Big head.
Loved his big ass head.
Bought those steroids from a guy who was in a band with my uncle in high school. I don't know why.
Oh, for
that's
real?
A fact. Yeah, yeah.
So you're kind of responsible for this.
Yeah, I'll take credit. Hey, he did great. They did.
That's true.
Yeah. But this guy says, this is a headline from the New York Times, a voice of skepticism on the impact of steroids. Who knew? This is a Moneyball type guy. His name's Eric Walker. Famous Moneyball type dude. Trying to summarize here, the popular perception that slugging across baseball has increased during the steroid era is almost certainly wrong. If power were up, we'd see it in the statistics, Walker said, but the boost just isn't there. He examined a figure about like how many bases they hit per at bat, which should be like a good, you know, a way to indicate power.
This is boring.
Yeah. Walker found two substantial and essentially permanent jumps. The first was in the 1920s because of the embrace of a livelier ball. The second was in 1993 and 1994, where it has since settled. Walker contends that such a jump is far more indicative of a change made to the ball, which Major League Baseball has long denied, than a steroid power boost, which would have produced an effect far more gradual. Subtract that 1994 3-4 spasm from subsequent records, you will find that power has since 1980 has remained essentially flat.
I'm bored.
Match.
I'm bored. Right. I don't care.
It's baseball. It's not baseball's fault that it sounds like this.
I know. Yeah. This is
a
problem.
It
with
is
baseball.
Baseball's fault because it's a really boring sport.
It's
really
so boring. Shut up. Yeah, you know what, Marlo? What do you have to say about
Shut
this?
The fuck up.
I agree.
Wow. That was for Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, one last one. We got one last one. I always got to pick like a funny headline from the New York Post because, I don't know, their headlines, I always enjoy them. This one, headline, Imam E-Date from Hell.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Here we go.
A Wall Street study. I mean, I don't think this is going to be Islamophobic in any way, right?
No,
it's a post.
No,
they would never
no.
do such a thing. A Wall Street stockbroker fears for her life after she rebuffed a Brooklyn imam she met on a Muslim dating site in an explosive $50 million lawsuit that
explosive.
Blows the lid.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Damn it, Matt.
That's not me. That's them.
That blows the lid off the wacky world of Muslim dating in New York. Shireen Alethi.
Wacky?
Yep. Wacky world. Yep.
Just people slipping on banana peels, burkas flying. Like, what are you talking about?
Shireen Alethi.
You want to
alleges...
get a drink at the Allahu Akbar?
Mm.
Bar. Akbar.
And then he just squirts a flower water, water flower in his face.
Alleges the religious leader promised he would make her one of four future wives and boasted of a cousin in Al-Qaeda. When she dumped him, he trashed her reputation in the Arab press.
Sorry,
the imam.
First of all, I think it's totally legitimate to be like, I got a cousin in Al-Qaeda, and he was supposed to fly the fifth plane, but like he slept in, it was fucked up, alarm clock, AM, PM, yeah, got mixed
really,
up. And,
he's a really sleepy guy.
Yeah, he's a real sleepy guy, but he'd have done some cool shit.
He would have done it, though. Like, if
he
was
totally would have done it. He
it
totally would have
like
done it.
2/9/11s.
Yeah. He's pretty, he thinks the Jews fucked up the AM, PM on the alarm clock.
The imam says Alethi is a loose, mentally unstable woman. He has filed criminal charges against her in Brooklyn for allegedly destroying two computers at the Olel al-Bab Mosque in Bay Ridge. He also claims she threatened to frame him for rape.
Jesus Christ.
But wait, she messed up computers because... Why at the mosque? Is that where they were hanging out to meet? Were they like talking on those computers?
She downloaded a bunch of Adobe plugins.
In June, she claims in court documents Saleh proposed marriage, telling her she would have to start wearing a veil and be subservient to him. When Alethi rejected the sheikh's proposal, she alleges, he suggested they have a temporary marriage or a muta so they could have sex without committing a sin.
I love that. Uh-huh. That's cool that exists.
I know, what?
I love this.
That's a horny ass loophole, but go on.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I get it though.
Alethi attempted to reconcile with El Hajj and in August went to the mosque where Saleh lives to beg him to stop the newspaper stories. He told her she would be exposed next in the press, according to court papers. In order to prevent her name from being smeared, she said, she ran into his bedroom, grabbed two laptops and threw them into the sink. Saleh responded by beating her up, she claims in court papers.
Oh, fuck.
That's the whole thing.
That's a
dark
story.
According to Alethi's court claims, the sheikh sent her an email describing her, quote, as a trashy and lustful woman, a weeping and cursed Jewish woman. Yep.
Jesus.
I don't know. I just liked the wacky headline. I didn't know the story was going to get all crazy.
Wait, was she Jewish or is he using it as a slur?
I mean, she was on a Muslim dating site, so I'm guessing that she was not.
And then she was gonna assumedly start, you know, dressing in Muslim garb and being his wife. And they keep calling him a sheikh, like, is he actually a sheikh? Is that part real?
Yeah, he's an imam, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I don't know the difference between imam and a sheikh.
Who goes by the name Sheikh Saleh.
Okay, so.
Sheikh Saleh, sorry.
It's a cool
I don't
name.
Know if that's just a name or an actual title.
I don't know either, dog. But, you know, if there's one thing I know, that the New York Post definitely is putting this out for totally normal, non-Islamophobic reasons.
Yeah.
You know, there's one of those stories that is just for the rest of the, you know, American public to be like, these Muslims.
I know. That was so messy.
Yeah. It's so specific. It's like just like such a specific story about the people. It's not bad enough to warrant a headline or
at all. That's like something that you would overhear someone telling someone on their lunch break.
Right, exactly.
Work.
Yeah, yeah.
About a friend.
My friend went on this. Yeah, but it's New York Post. They're like, we got any anti-Muslim pitches? Oh, I got one. I know this chick who's, you know, beat
up.
The
New York Post, stories that you should read while you're stirring your coffee.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh.
But that, I feel like we're properly caught up, and that has been the Back in the Day machine.
Okay, now we know what happened at the time this episode came out, so we can understand it. Before we go on, this week's Balmer B story is, listen, I had strep throat. It's not good. And it's also based on a specific song by the Gorillaz called Stylo. I don't know if anyone knows it. I thought people knew it, but probably not. Anyways, here's a little cut of it. And you can listen to the whole thing at the end of the episode. Anyways, Listen, I do these for
if I
me.
Knew the original song, I'd probably really enjoy that more.
But. I know. It's just like, I know that song because I know that album very well. I really enjoy the Gorillaz is the thing, guys.
Yeah.
I've always, I wanted to do one for a while.
They're pretty good for cartoons.
They're a really good cartoon band. Really good cartoon band. You can listen to the whole rest of that episode. At the whole rest of that song at the end of the episode. But now it's time to talk about The Wire. Wires, what happened in the episode about The Wire? Okay.
You start him off of singing. He just can't stop. It's-
I know. I've got like brain fog too. I'm just like, oh, I don't think I'm getting enough oxygen. Let's talk about wires. All right. A lot of things happened in this episode. It really, you know, we had... Freeman is now involved in creating this fake serial killer, and he's got great ideas like let's go find some teeth and bite homeless people to death. Well, they're already dead. And then, you know, Prop Joe is helping out Marlowe. I mean, he's been helping him this whole season.
It'll work out really well, I bet.
Yeah, he's like, hey, here's how to wash your money. And also, you know, here's the fucking, you know, where to put your money in the Bahamas. And also, you know, he does a bunch of stuff for him. Yeah, here's Levy. Here's the drug lawyer. And then, you know, that does not turn out well for Prop Joe. He gets all of his, you know, gets all of his information taken, and then he gets gatted. Yeah, a lot of things happen. Vince, what did you think of this episode?
I would describe this as one of the all-time bummer episodes of The Wire. You know, you got Prop Joe dies at the end, McNulty and Beatty, like it's basically over. Freeman seems to be going off the deep end along with McNulty, and you know, there's a growing sense that some things are about to get worse in the mayor's office and in the police department. It's a transitional episode. It's not my favorite of the season. There's a couple scenes I really like. Overall, I found that, like, you know, I usually appreciate that The Wire doesn't bother explaining everything, but this one I found like especially obtuse. Like there was like a couple like key plot points where I'm like, I don't really understand what's happening, but I know they're going somewhere good, so I forgive it.
Yeah. Katrina, what'd you think of this episode?
I was also saddened by it, but also the sad parts did, even to speak to what Vince was saying about things going in a bad direction, I was like, oh, I want to watch to see Marlo get his now because I'm mad.
Yeah.
So like as a transitional episode, it was, it worked to want me to watch the next one because I was just like, what the fuck?
And as we all know about The Wire, the bad people always get theirs and the good people always,
that's the thing,
always triumph, you know?
It's one of those happy ending shows where...
Like something might happen, though. Like he might, you know, lose a kneecap or something.
Right,
yeah. Certainly justice will be served. It's a show about cops.
Even if it's at the hands of an innocent that he loves.
That's
that
right.
Seems to be really what happens is like nothing will happen to that person, but that person will get to watch someone they love die.
Yeah.
Who hasn't done anything wrong.
Yeah. Which is, you know, justice, you know,
that's the best kind of justice you can get. You know, one that causes more trauma. And
yes. The death of an innocent.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you guys. This was for me, a transition episode is the name of the episode, but it did feel like setting up some stuff. It also, this season is the shortest season of The Wire, and I feel like there's points in this episode in particular where they were like speeding things up to a degree that is uncommon for this show. This show usually takes a long time for anything to happen. There's a lot of setup, but we're like, you know, four episodes in, and Freeman is already like, yeah, let's get some dentures and bite some corpses.
Oh, like, my gosh. And that scene where Bunk is just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
so good.
So expecting him to be the voice of reason. He's like, okay, so I guess I'm the only sane person left in this precinct that isn't just like
right
openly dying from eating ramen every day. Like, it's just like he is the only person that cares, and then everyone else is like oblivious and slowly dying of heart disease.
Yes, 100%.
I will defend the big narrative swing that they take in this plot device of like inventing a serial killer, because I think like this was less believable when The Wire came out, but like if you read the book We Own This City, like they mm-hmm. were doing way crazier and more blatantly corrupt shit than inventing a serial killer. There was dudes that were making like $50,000 a month in overtime and shit, like wild shit, and that was while they were like just robbing drug dealers, but
drug dealers and civilians.
I get it in like the fictional world of The Wire, like this was definitely like they're stepping it up a notch
for how real. And here's the thing, even what you just said, if mm-hmm. they would have showed them consistently like Shield style shaking down people and like right. taking thousands of dollars off the top, that is to me way more believable than him going back and like creating evidence and stuff. This is like crazy.
It's kind of funny because it's like in order to like ground it in our fictional idea of what like the Baltimore cops were like, they had to like take greater liberties than if they showed us like it would have been an even bigger bridge to show us like the real things that one guy's drug crew were doing in We Own the City.
I mean, like, again, yes, I also will, I allow it to be a TV show. I allow it to, be like, well, we're going to do something very fictional in this, and it's probably not the most insane thing if you are someone who has been reporting on the Baltimore Police Department for, decades or whatever. Like, you're probably like, nah, they got into some weird
shit. It's definitely, like, too clever by half. Like, he's playing a bit of a long game that you didn't really need to do.
Right. But I think with this episode in particular, where I saw it is, like, the problem being how quickly they've convinced everyone to go along with this, including they almost kind of make a joke about it at one point when Daniels and Freeman are they're trying to find bodies, and they have a police friend, Freeman does, from the old days.
Like, they don't have enough to do. Now they're going to go sniffing around for fresh bodies that match a particular characteristic.
Yes.
Like, oh, my gosh.
And not just that, but also involve more people in this insane plot.
Yes.
And
he's got extra paperwork now because of this.
We meet Lester's old partner from Patrol, who apparently calls him Socks, which is a fun little detail. Like, I love that his nickname is Socks. Like, you can sort of
a little kitty cat.
Yeah, you can invent like a backstory of like, is he like a cat, or did he wear, he seems like a guy who would wear like cool socks, and that would be his trademark too. Like, I could see that.
He seems like he would change only his socks because he's blackout all the time. So I could see him being like, you wore that shirt 3 days in a row, but your socks look amazing.
Yeah, no, this was Freeman McNulty. This was Freeman's nickname. Yeah. McNulty is Bushy Top.
Oh, that's right. Freeman was Socks.
And that's why I got them switched, you see. Why I would assume that he may be called Bushy Top and he might be Socks.
Yes. But like,
I could see, I mean, if it was McNulty, you'd be like, oh, Socks, because he's like a tomcat. Whereas Freeman, I could see like, no, he has a thing for expensive socks.
Let's be honest. Freeman is called Socks because he definitely has gone through a female detective's like sock drawer and smelled it. Let's just be real. He has a sensual, sexual vibe to him. You know, he's not into regular stuff.
Like, he's kind of a pervert, but he's like enough of a daddy that you kind of just like let it go.
Right.
He's like, oh, he's old school pervert.
He's like, I don't sniff panties like some kind of animal. Right. I like socks.
I sniff socks and I collect pictures of slender hands. You know, like that's.
I'm not into panties. I like feet, like Jesus, you know?
Yes,
like
exactly.
He does look like he would look at hand model pictures to smooth jazz. Yeah. He'd be like, is he jerking off? Yeah. I don't even know. Yeah. I don't even know what this is.
You see that ring finger right there?
Yeah. Perfect proportions.
He does seem like classy. You're right.
But with Freeman's old like beat cop buddy, like it's almost like they make a little bit of a joke about how fast people are just like, okay, like getting into this.
Well, this guy's checked out.
Plot.
This guy is a real estate agent. He doesn't give a fuck about the police.
True,
police
but it's,
shit. Like he's already been fucked over by the cops. He's like, whatever you do,
yeah.
Just if you write the report and don't cause me extra work, I don't give a shit. I just don't want to know what it is.
Yeah, but I love the scene together, and I have a clip of that.
Hey, I'm on my lunch break.
Excuse me, officer. Is this the on-ramp to 95?
So this isn't a social call.
I wish it were.
Well, get on with it. I got a busy day tomorrow. I need my rest.
Well, get on with it, motherfucker.
Oscar, we're in need of a body. Male, homeless, little or no decom. We need to get to it before anybody else gets a look-see.
You want to open an H5? How do I reach you?
All right.
You want to know why?
I just McNulty's entire like, what? You're not even gonna.
Don't you want to know about my cool plan?
Yeah,
I got a really
good
plan. I thought like three levels ahead.
Really wanted to tell you about it. I was excited, in fact.
This is what drives me as a person. Is the yes. thing is telling people how smart I am.
I want someone to say, "Cool, you're smart."
Yeah. Instead, it's 11 p.m. It's 11 p.m. in this scene. Yeah. He is blackout. Yeah. He does not know.
Yeah.
Who he's even talking to in that scene?
He's like, "All right, you want me to call you as soon as a homeless guy dies. All right, I'm gonna go back to sleep now."
Yeah, that's all you wanted. All right, bye.
Oh, I thought you were gonna ask me something weird.
This could have been a text. He just like rolls back over.
Yeah, this could have been a text. What the fuck?
I thought I was gonna have to rob a lady's house that you assaulted. This is easy.
Yeah, this is way better than the shit you asked me to do before. But yeah, like it's you know, it's a little bit insane, the kind of like omerta, I guess. I don't know, the way that people the cops, you know, like Freeman's just going along with
Excuse
it.
Me. That's our word. You're not.
I'm sorry.
To,
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah. I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't use Italian. Mm-hmm. Whatever the omerta version for cops is, there are no Italian cops except for
in with
Coliccio.
Cops with cops it's Coliccio.
Fuck.
With cops, it's Omerta with an apostrophe because they're Irish. It's O. That's
Omerta. O-merta. That's very good. Mm-hmm. That's very good. But yes, Coliccio?
Yes. We've had this discussion on the show before.
I can't pronounce it.
It's spelled like Tom Coliccio from Top Chef. And in this episode, he pronounces it himself as Coliccio, which is... incorrect pronunciation, but as we know from me calling myself Mancini, we Italians sometimes anglicize the pronunciation of our last name to make it easier for people.
Yeah, his name actually should be Vincenzo Pastafaggio. That's how you are supposed to pronounce it.
You put a little Portuguese on that, but I
did I?
Yeah. Fajou.
Yeah, that's true.
Pastafaggio.
Pastafaggio. I love Portuguese. Have I mentioned before that I think Portuguese just sounds like a deaf French guy trying to speak Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
I have said that. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's true, though.
It's true. They only know the vowels.
Me conexão. Sorry. Oh, God. I'm in trouble. But we're going to talk about Coliccio.
Come on. What are we going to offend? The Portuguese? They're not smart enough to listen
That's
to podcasts.
That's a good point. Yeah. Oh, you know what's crazy is Portugal is still around. Like, what are
it's
you guys
cool.
doing?
It's cool.
How are they doing?
They're doing
I don't
good.
Even know.
Everybody,
they got, I know
everybody
they like soccer.
Yeah, they're making stews.
My favorite, one of my favorite musicians from Baltimore, Panda Bear, he lives there now with his model Portuguese wife. Huh. These are things I know about Portugal.
Good for him.
So yeah, Coliccio. He is he's got his own little arc in this episode that mixes in with the Herc and Carve arc. And it's
you know what I like about this character? I feel like it started with that haircut and they were like, all right, how can we design a character to fit this haircut? And then they just made him like
you think
this.
They started there first?
Yeah. They had the haircut first and everything else just sort of grew out of that.
It's interesting because he kind of has like the proto like alt-right fascist haircut before that was even a thing. You know, and hey, you know, The Wire, ahead of the times, fashion-wise and fascist-wise. But there's a great cold open in this episode, and I have a clip of it, in which Kennard plays a prank on Caliccio, and then Caliccio loses his mind.
Kennard creates a Kennard, which is the crazy
That's very
thing.
Good.
Mm-hmm. What are we, invisible?
Oh, yeah.
No, just fucking with him, man. Hands on the wall, fucker!
I'm sorry. Hands on the wall, fuckers. Hey, fuckers. He's just it's not
like
even...
clearly does not work no. in a precinct near where he lives.
No, yes. Yeah, no, of course. He's like hitting kids. All right, here we go.
What the fuck?
Asshole.
We need to block every lane here. Hey, shut it down. It's a police operation here.
Let's get back to your post. Let's back these vehicles up.
Excuse me, officer.
I'm not telling you. Get.
Tony, calm down.
Officer, if you could just move your car forward just a little bit, I'm going to get right down the road. Calm down.
He's so mad. I love it so much. It's just like that scene is so perfect because he gets so easily played by you know, the corner boys, and he just has his pride hurt so bad that he's just like, I gotta brutalize someone who's like my size.
Yeah.
Well, because also the whole time that scene was happening, I was just thinking he's getting shit on everyone.
I know, he's touching
like
people.
He intentionally wipes it on that child. And then wipe shit on a child. And then like everything through that whole ordeal is just like, yeah, but he still probably smells a little bit like shit right now.
100%. Yeah. And then he's fighting, you know, with this total stranger, and he's probably getting doo-doo on him too.
Who ends up being a teacher.
Yeah, that's right. He ends
like
up...
they're like, bad news. He's actually not someone that we can blame.
Right.
Like make look bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like,
we
bad
found
news.
The one guy without a warrant in this neighborhood.
Right. Exactly. Turns out, you beat up a citizen who people like.
Yeah.
And he's just like, well, come on. I saw a black guy in a car. What am I supposed to do?
He says something like, they should be arrested for honking at cops or something like that. He should be in trouble, not me. And it's like, you're insane. Because now you're not even like dog shit in your hand in the heat of the moment, mad, and you're still saying dumb shit.
Yeah, you're still mad.
Yeah.
You're still sitting there mad. And
it's also still a thing where cops will be doing something that is really like of no use to anyone, but they're blocking like three lanes of traffic and causing like a giant traffic jam.
So true.
How often have you been there where you're like, hey, cop, could you pull over like 6 inches further to the right so you don't block like an entire fucking city's worth of traffic?
But Vince, have you considered, fuck you, shitbird, you deserve to die?
But
it turns out he was a citizen, the guy who he brutalized for no reason, and Carve at first is trying to like give him an out. He's doing the normal cop thing of like, just you know, like, get your story straight, we're gonna write on this, blah blah blah, and Caliccio just, you know, decides he's gonna hold on to his anger, and then Carve decides he is going to rat on Caliccio. He's not gonna back him, and they have this it ends with this great conversation between Herc and Carve, in which you know, Carve, it becomes clear he's finally learned something. After years of being one of the worst cops, he's learned that, like, sometimes you have to be good cop. I have a clip of that as well.
Told you, Herc. But when I gave you that kit to debrief last year, you were supposed to get him to bunk Moreland. You remember that?
Yeah. So what?
So it mattered.
So what the fuck does this have to do with Caliccio?
It all matters.
So you gotta do Caliccio, huh? Guess you think they had to do me. Yeah, probably. These guys are gonna talk shit about you for a while. But fuck them, Carve. You do what needs done.
Hell yeah.
I love that scene so much. It made me cry.
I love your friends.
That was another reason I thought y'all picked this one for me on purpose, because last time they were brutalizing a teen together. and then they played pool with him. Yes. And like, could have been his foster dad's, but he got sent off and then probably died. But yeah,
was Bodhi. He ended
that was
up
what
escaping.
He was referencing. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I mean, perfect. Like, I know that's the kind of thing that doesn't happen in real life that often, but it is like the reason that we sort of read fiction and write it.
Right.
It's like creating this this aspirational universe where you can take a knucklehead and just like say the right words to him and give him
and
the right experience, and he gets it and he comes around and he becomes good, and you're like, oh
yeah, yeah. Even him being like, I was a piece of shit, there was probably no other way to stop me. Good
call. No, you're right. You're right.
I was horrible.
I think one of the reasons why he
also
is,
both of their heads are so moisturized and shiny, and they look great.
They have both. They both have chrome domes. They're just like, what y'all?
That's why they're friends.
That's why they're friends. They probably rub them together.
That's their wonder twin powers.
Do you ever go to a rave and you see the guys, they have those like balls, those marbles, and they just, you know, they put it in their hand and they flip it.
Oh.
Yeah. That's what their heads are like. What I think also, what like, it is fiction, but it also is tethered to the reality that like Herc is like, you're right, I probably deserve to get fired. Also, I'm in a much better position because you guys are all not making any money and everything sucks for you. And I'm just, you know, fucking living my best life working for the drug lawyer Levy. And so like part of him is just like, you know, it actually worked out well. I'm glad I got done.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great scene between Herc and Marlo, actually, and it ends with
another good scene of people kind of being friends. Like when characters are friends.
I like when characters are friends.
It's so good when characters are friends.
I like when people should not be friends are friends, and I'm just like, just be friends forever. What I enjoy about this is, well, I enjoy the exchange between Marlo and Herc, but also Herc and Prop Joe, except for the very end, and I will ask you a question once I play the clip.
You're looking prosperous.
I give by.
I'm sorry, prosperous Joe. I love it.
Stanfield, Joseph tells me good things about you.
Hey, you ever find that camera?
Cost me the job.
He's laughing in his face.
Croquetti finally dumps Burrell.
Irvin was a year before me at Dunbar.
Oh, shit.
He was in the Glee Club.
You're killing me. I gotta ask.
Stone stupid.
Can you explain that to me? What is he talking about there?
He's saying he was a dumb guy.
He's dumb as a rock. They went to school together.
Right, right. He said, it's killing me. I gotta ask. And I was having trouble putting together.
Well, I think he was just like, you have to tell me what he was like.
Is he smart? Yeah.
I think he just meant like at all what is he like, maybe.
Oh, okay.
And then he's like stone stupid. And he's like, okay. Oh great, he's an idiot.
Oh, okay. That it makes sense. I just wasn't sure if I was missing something there.
I like Prop Joe because he has real Baltimore use.
Oh,
that's
another one
of my notes.
He's, I mean, he's a Robert Chu, real ass Baltimorean.
Chew.
And
you can R.I.P. tell.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
That's just such a great compliment to when you see a fat guy that you haven't seen in a while. You're like, oh, you're looking prosperous. It's like a nice way to say like, oh, you're fat as fuck.
That is
that's like
beautiful.
A compliment for a king.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Good to be fat, and you're like, look at you, you're eating well.
Yeah.
I love the idea that like the fatter the king, like in olden times, the more you're like, damn, that guy's doing great.
You
see a guy who has
look
the gout and just like is red from alcohol use, and you're like, wow, you sure are looking stout.
He's
and ready.
Missing a leg because he eats too much sugar and has diabetes. And he's like, look, God damn, that guy's crushing
his country is doing very well.
Yeah. He's just wheezing into his crown. He's just like, fucking hey, dude, we got to move to France. Look at the king. If he's eating that good. Oh, shit. Brent Flyberg, producer?
Yeah. Hey, I'm eating good. And if we want to continue eating good, we need to stop for an ad break to get some
perfect
money.
Perfect.
Nice, Brent.
He's right. It is time for you to consider advertisements in order for us to get food in our bellies. So please stick around and we will be right back. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s, and he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it, he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
And we are back. Okay.
There was a new picture of Kim Jong-un that the North Korean news agency put out today where he's just like inspecting a wall of barrels, but he has these pant legs that are like double Janko level. Like,
nice.
It looks like he's wearing two dresses on both legs. Cause there's been rumors that he like has the gout. And I don't know. It's just like you have to read so much into the pictures cause they don't give you much otherwise, but he's wearing these incredibly billowy pant legs, and he's
wearing,
you know, of
a
course,
wide leg palazzo.
Yeah, and he's standing in front of like a bank of generals, and of course they all have like pretty wide loose pant legs too. Because
yeah,
just
but you know who's on top?
Because like,
whoever has the widest pants is the one who rules
well,
the kingdom.
And they're like, all right, well the king has the gout, and he's wearing very wide pant legs to cover his gout, so we all have to pretend that is just the style that
we
do now.
Like he's been eating so many chicken livers that it's like gauchos for everyone.
Yeah,
I love that. Wait, I'm now looking at the pants, and oh my god.
Are
it's incredibly billowy and wide.
Wide just, like pants are having a moment. Hold on.
I'm glad that, you know what? Because like there's like a whole like series of photos of me in seventh grade that, you know, I'd rather keep hidden because of my wide pant legs. But now, maybe if it comes back, dude, I'm putting that out there. I'm going to start showing people me as a kid being cool as fuck with pants so big you could hide a skateboard in there so that you could sneak a skateboard on campus.
Yeah. You can hide an Arizona iced tea in there and a skateboard.
Mm-hmm. You could hide another pair of pants.
Stop. He looks so good.
He looks great. He looks great.
This is a fit. Like, yeah. If Pharrell wore this, no one would bat an eye.
Right, no one
would
say shit about it.
That's why they are. Yeah, they're like definitely a statement.
Yeah. Yeah, so Prop Joe, sort of the King Jong-un of the east side of Baltimore. But he's not as smart as Kim Jong-un, because if he was smart, you know, he would easily decide to kill one of his relatives because his relative is clearly showing signs of being a big betrayer, but he doesn't. You see the first scene with Prop Joe, he is getting like a memorial wreath for Butchie, who was murdered by Chris and Snoop in the previous episode. And he's like doing it because he wants to, like, I think he wants to like give a message to Omar, like,
yeah, like, just hey, so I, you like know, this guy. Yeah,
I loved him, and I was not involved.
Yep, this wasn't me.
It was not me, because he's worried, rightfully so, that Omar is going to come after him and murder him. Mm-hmm. And he says in the scene with Slim Charles, like, I'm not going to go after my nephew, not after, you know, not with just like rumors, and, you know, like, he has no evidence, so I'm not going to go, you know, go after him. Meanwhile, it's just so fucking clear that Cheese is not to be trusted. And Cheese has some of my favorite parts in this episode. this is a heavy Cheese episode, and I love it. Number one, him at the co-op talking shit with the Hungry Man. And
oh my gosh, yeah.
Yes.
He really took that feud from like 0 to 1,000. I know. I thought they just didn't like each other. I didn't know he like actually wanted to torture and murder the guy.
Right. It was definitely 0 to 1,000, but you know, it made for some good lines, and I have clips of those.
Junior here took it upon himself to make unlawful incursions into county territory that was marked for my people.
Incursions? Ain't you the articulate motherfucker?
Keep on talking, boy, you're gonna get spanked.
Like you got the heart. Motherfucker pissed like a bitch.
All right, shut it down.
Last I looked, you wasn't no charter member.
This CIA shit off the hook. I ain't done nothing lately to piss you off, right? Right?
Man already shit himself, and we ain't even get started yet. He's funky, yo.
It's a gift from Marlo.
Yo, Hungry Man.
So, a few things.
I love female Lil Bow Wow also.
Yeah.
The girl soldier no one's is my favorite.
Yeah.
She's heartless. Snoop and also, Method Man is a babe, so I'm also glad that he had tons of FaceTime in this episode.
Yes. He's a beautiful, beautiful man. And very funny in this series, but I particularly love He Pissed Like a Bitch.
Okay, and that's one that I would have a question for, because I was like, was that like an old man prostate dig? Like, what does that mean? Does that mean that he sits down?
He means he sits down to pee.
Oh, okay, okay.
And I have to just ask, Vince, do you piss like a bitch?
No. I pee standing up. I pee outside like a real free man.
I'm going to be 100% real and vulnerable here. 50-50, I piss like a bitch. I find it's more comfortable. I enjoy.
I don't see why it wouldn't be.
You're literally sitting down. It's right. So nice. Wait, what's wrong with pissing like a bitch? Vince, I've never understood this. I've for years and years, I've watched people go to urinals and stand there and just like have their dicks out next to other men. By the way, a little suspect, am I right? Homophobic joke. But also, it's just like, but you could sit down. And just relax. Yeah, but
that's the whole point of having a penis. You can just
only bitches relax, apparently.
The point of a penis is what? So you can stand and piss on a tree like an animal?
Yeah, exactly. It's great.
The convenience. Like, anytime I can find a bathroom, I understand not pissing like a bitch. But if you're in a bathroom, I don't know why you wouldn't want to, like, take a load off
take
and piss
a load
like a bitch.
Off. Put your feet up.
Well, that's what I was thinking also. Is it that, like, some people can't piss like a bitch because their dick is so big?
Mm. Oh, I never thought about that.
Like, I was trying, because I didn't totally understand why he was saying it. So I was like, is this like a manhood? I knew it was a manhood thing, but I didn't know.
I felt exactly like for cheese, it was an old guy joke. It was like your prostate or something.
Right.
I just feel like it's a good all-purpose insult.
No, it works.
That you're maybe reading too much into it. Like, there's some insults that just sort of work even if they don't like apply that
right.
specifically
just,
to the person.
It's a mouthfeel thing too. It's like when cheese called someone cottage cheese chest ass motherfucker. Like, I think I understand what he's saying, but for the most part, I think it's just great to call someone a cottage cheese chest ass motherfucker.
It's absolutely one of those things that if someone yelled it on a bus, even if you were like, what's wrong with kids pissing like a bitch? It doesn't matter. Everyone's already laughing.
Everyone's laughing. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. It just sounds, it's like, I don't even need to know what you mean to think it's funny.
Yeah.
But if we're getting into it, it's more comfortable. And listen, the worst part of it is sometimes, depending on the water level, my dick doesn't fall in, but my balls sometimes do. And so sometimes I have you get wet balls.
Anyway, you just got really long balls. Vince was already vehemently not on board for sitting down, and now you're telling him about how you teabagged the toilet water, and he's like, I don't need
it. Listen, that's the worst part, but I don't think, Vince, I don't think you have. I'm famous. Like, they call me Long Ball Leap. Everyone knows I got long balls,
balls.
You have long balls too?
They've never touched the water though, so I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe
so
they're not that long.
You don't even know what long is.
Yeah, you thought clearly. You had long balls.
You thought you had long balls. They're probably just nice compact in there like a bulldog's, but mine fucking hanging. This shit hanging like a ripe fruit ready to be eaten. Okay. Moving on. Moving on. Hungry Man is, I think, about to get tortured, murdered. That's too bad. Meanwhile, Marlo's going throughout this episode and, you know, like, once again, just like talking to the Greeks and, you know, finally gets to talk to the Greek who, you know, has a whole scene with him where he's explains, you know, just take my money. And they're like, fine. I'm not really sure what's going on in that whole scene. I don't understand if the Greek is like, ooh, he's not Prop Joe. This is good. Now we can get rid of Prop Joe. Like,
yeah,
seems weird
to me. That's the scene that I don't understand. Like the whole insurance conversation, like I don't really get it.
Yeah. No, I don't really understand it either. Again, this episode did feel like they only had 10 this season. And because of that, they had to like cut some corners, like things kind of happen. Like we just kind of have to take Marlo's word when at the end he's like, when Prop Joe says, but my supply, and he said, they're cool with it. The Greeks are cool with it. We just have to take his word that that's what that conversation meant. But it didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
It felt like they were just trying to get him out. Like, okay, we'll take your money. But we're
right.
Not...
But he thinks he's in now.
Yeah. And and as far as I remember, that kind of just ends up being the thing. I don't understand what led to the Greeks being cool enough with that I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It felt like everything feels like it's skipping one step. Even when you said like the stone stupid line, it felt like they were skipping like one step. That one I got, but the insurance one I was sort of scratching my head over.
Yeah. But you know, it's all to say that at this point, Marlowe's lined up all of the pieces that he's going to need to not need Prop Joe anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, at the end of the episode, he is finally able to kill Prop Joe, which is a very sad ending, but also, like, cements my... my hatred of Marlo, but my love of Jamie Hector, the actor, mm-hmm. because like this character for me goes down as one of the scariest villains mm-hmm. In any TV show. Like Marlo is just such a frightening type of person because he's yeah. so cold mm-hmm. and he's so heartless. And like, even in his way of just like, sleep now.
Like, yeah. I know. Yeah. Just like nobody has killed anyone and been like, you're saying so like, I want to sit here and watch it happen and have, you know, I facilitated this, but like not at all.
Yeah.
It's so puppet mastery.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, you know, he's given him the sort of the villain thing where he like, you know, explains himself before he murders the mm-hmm. person.
Yes, but, like James Bond on yes. the like table with the circular saw.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just like taking up time, but in this case, you know, without the Deus Ex Machina ending where Prop Joe somehow is able to lightning fast like hit Chris Partlow with his cane and run away. No,
yeah, I don't think Prop Joe's done anything lightning fast in years.
No, he's too prosperous.
He's too prosperous to move that fast.
Yeah, but I have a clip of this scene.
You ain't come to see me off, my nephew. Boy, was always a disappointment. Propositioned him.
Also, I'm sorry, but I really do love ending, you know, your last scene. You're like, I'm gonna do my catchphrase one more
gotta
time.
Gotta go out doing your catchphrase.
Gotta do my catchphrase. I'm Prop Joe. I can't leave this earth without giving one more proposition.
Just step out the way. You never hear from me again. I'll just disappear.
Joe, you'll be up in a mischief in no time. Truth is, you won't be able to change up any more than me. Close your eyes. It won't hurt nothing. There now. Joe, relax. Breathe easy.
No! It sucks.
It's so sad.
It's very sad. And it's so fucking cold. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's just so good at it. Like, I want to watch Bosch now because Jamie Hector is in Bosch and he plays.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Is it Bosch or is it Reacher? He's in some weird Amazon Prime show. Mm-hmm. And apparently he plays like a nice guy detective. And I'm like, I want
to
see that.
I need to see this person not be awful.
I know. I want to see him be nice. Because he's so scary.
It's so sad. Well, and even like you said, everything we've seen this episode and last where he's like mm-hmm. gone to visit his money. Like, I wonder, even looking back, I don't think at that point Prop Joe thought any of that was going to come back to bite him.
No, definitely
showing
not.
Him, yeah, how to like get his. But even when he says, my nephew was always a disappointment. Is that him confirming that like his nephew is the reason he's about to die? Okay.
Yes. I mean, I feel like Prop Joe is an echo of Stringer in that he and D'Angelo Barksdale, where he sort of has this fantasy that the drug game could operate like a normal business. And yeah. And it does operate like a normal business, but not in the way that he thinks, which is that everyone does what they can get away with and
right.
cuts corners when they need to. He's thinking it's going to be, you know, some handshake thing and
right.
they can be
he
nice to
think
each
it
other.
It's going to be that barbaric all the time.
Yes.
Like it
yes.
doesn't. Yeah.
He thinks like the hand of the market is nice and it guides people to be better friends and it does not work like that.
Yeah. Unfortunately it doesn't. And you know, I think part of that confidence comes from him. He's lasted this long, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's, mm-hmm. he figures what's, you know, Marlo's just another iteration of, you know, a bunch of other young crown wearing punks from before, mm-hmm. you know, like, and so I think for him, he, for some reason, as sharp as he is throughout the whole series, he doesn't see what Marlo is doing clearly. Like, yeah. I think any viewer watching it was like, You see what Marlo's doing
here,
right?
It's like, do you think he just underestimated everyone because he had so much belief in, like, them meeting at the Ramada Ballroom?
I think so, actually.
I mean, I think he thought his knowledge was going to save him somehow. Like, his like being so smart about the game was going to make it, like, somehow made him...
It's like, honey, you know, no.
Yeah.
And I think also, you know, the one thing he didn't count on was being betrayed by his own blood. And I think that, I mean, because that, I think, is a huge reason. I mean, that's why he got killed at the end there. He got set up by Cheese.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It just, like, throughout this season, you're watching Marlo be like, hey, how do I do everything that you're doing? No reason.
Say, for sake of argument, if I wanted to cut you out of this deal, what would I do? Yeah.
What is everything that you do so I can do it and then not need you? But you'll
just
be around.
Just out of curiosity.
Just out of curiosity.
We were just like spitballing the other night and we were brainstorming about some stuff.
We're sitting around. We were at a different Ramada and we're just thinking about, you know, what the next steps are. But he's like, he's doing, you know, I think Marlo's not even doing that good of a job of not seeming like a sociopathic person who's like trying to like just suck up all the information he can.
Like, they should all be afraid of how little he talks and blinks at those meetings.
Exactly.
Like, everyone look out for that guy.
He's the most obvious sociopath.
It's like a bunch of old heads. Like, everybody get your prostate checked and then look out for Marlo. All of you. That's the to-do list for this week.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. That's it for Prop Joe. Goodbye, buddy. We love you. So the rest of the story. Oh, the Sun papers. We got to talk about what happens at the Baltimore Sun.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That's right. So Scott Templeton is getting his clips together. He wants to leave. He's looking for, you know, brighter pastures. Everyone's getting bought out. Everything sucks.
A little weasel. You can just see his little... eager
fucking
little fucking
him.
Weasel face.
Thank you. I do not like him.
Yes. He is a little weaselly ass, lying punk ass bitch. Straight.
But even this storyline, like, we see him. I mean, this one is easier to understand, but it also feels like it's very fast forward. Like, you see him go in there and it's, you know, it's sort of low key like a job interview, but the guy kind of just is like, hey, yeah, cool clips. Not for us. Good to meet you. See you later. And I don't know. It was kind of like a situation where...
But then they're also like, want to come to our very confidential everyday meeting? And it's like, he doesn't even work here. What is this?
Well, he wanted to sit in at first, right?
Yeah. But why would you let someone do that? Like you're saying, Vince, if you're like, yeah, you don't write well enough for us yet, but you can come hear all of our business real quick if you want.
It feels like the business equivalent of like him thinking it was a date and they're not thinking it was a date. Like, they're just going to go there and eat some food. And he's like, no, but this is a date, right? Like, we're going to hang out after this. And as soon as like the boss drops that he has a boyfriend already, he's just like, all right, well, see you later. I'm not helping you move this table.
Yeah. Fuck right. Off. I'm not going to help you move. But I have that scene, Vince, of Scott at that interview. Cause
my favorite. I love it.
I know you love it.
Some of your feature work is a little wrought for what we do here at the Post language-wise, but it all shows initiative.
Well, that's the style they want from me. But to tell you the truth, I prefer to write it dry.
You've been in Baltimore long?
2 years. Before that, I was at the Kansas City Star for 3 years. Wichita Eagle before that.
Sun's a fine paper. You have anything to do with those ground rent stories last year? It's good stuff.
That
real
sucks.
Good stuff.
He's like, hey, do you have anything to do with something that I actually like and read? Yeah, no?
Not at all.
Anyways, bye.
That was such a burn. I was wondering, I couldn't remember, and I was wondering if that was a reference to a story that he had like passed on or something like that.
I mean, it's leaving it up to our imagination to sort of fill in the blanks. Like, I like to imagine that someone that he hates at the Sun wrote that, and he's just like, he likes it. Because that happens to me sometimes where people, oh, did you write that one thing? I'm like, ugh, no, that... fucking dreck that some schmuck wrote. No, I didn't write that. No, it's just, I love the subtlety of it. Like the managing editor or whatever his job is, he's like trying to be complimentary and still is just really, everything he says is insulting him further. Mm-hmm. And the way he backpedals where he's like, oh, this is a little rot for what we do language wise. And he's like, oh, that's the way they want me to write it. Yeah, actually, yeah. I'd prefer to write it drier. Like yeah. if it were up to me. So, and that's another funny thing about like any sort of media job is like, you're trying to show off something that you did as if, there was no other hand in it. And, mm-hmm. you know, half the time the editor wrote the headline and, you know, you wanted
it
to
got
do
beat to hell. Like yeah, what you ended up writing wasn't exactly what you wanted to write anyway.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, just some interesting fun facts that a listener made me aware of. Vince, I don't know if you knew this.
Go
but
on.
Scott Templeton, the actor, Tom McCarthy. Do you know about him?
No, I think I may have looked this up at one point, but I don't remember.
What? All right. So the actor who plays that guy, weaselly ass Scott Templeton, he is also a writer director, and he wrote and directed Spotlight.
Oh, is that him?
Yeah.
Oh wow, I didn't realize.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't that win Best Picture? Am I crazy?
I think it did. Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
That was the good one. The Post was the shitty one.
That was the bad newspaper movies. But also he has a writing credit. He wrote the story for, wait for it, Pixar's Up.
Oh.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Take that, Baltimore Sun.
Yeah. Honestly, he went on to brighter pastures, but it's just kind of crazy.
That is crazy.
Like, isn't that nuts? Isn't that fucking crazy, dog?
He specializes as a fake news guy, which is very cool. Yeah.
That is wild, dog. And meanwhile, he is like an actor. He's been in a bunch of shit. The motherfucker.
Oh shit! He directed the Station Agent,
yes.
which is like the breakout
Peter Dinklage
hit
movie.
Of yeah, Peter Dinklage.
Yeah,
very cool. And Win Win, the Paul Giamatti wrestling movie.
It's crazy, dude. You know, like
yeah.
he might be the most successful guy who came out of The Wire, which is nuts. But anyways, Scott's a bitch. We all hate him. Weasel ass bitch. And my favorite scene in what's going on with the son is that at one point, so Burrell is finally being let go. You know, in the previous episode, there's like a newspaper, you know, coming out saying they're going to let him go and they do it. Or I guess this is the episode where that happens. I don't know. Whatever. I love... watching number one, I love Burrell, Daniels talking to Burrell, being like, I didn't say those things, you know, they printed lies about me
when he's golfing in his yeah. office and it seems so, like he's gonna bash the back of his head in for a second. There's
so
a fake serial killer. I was like, if he kills him in this office, I don't even know what the fuck this show is
yeah.
doing. Like, for half a second.
Yeah, that's true. The fact that they even went with the fake serial killer storyline to begin with means anything could happen.
Yes, I was open to it for
five seconds.
Just,
Lance Reddick, another fallen Wire hero, RIP, is so funny in this scene. And he does it so like subtly. Just like watching Burrell like just circle him with a golf club.
Yeah.
I have that clip. It's
suggesting that I've broken chain of command, that I've gone behind your back, that I've lobbied against you in any way, they're lying. Respectfully, sir, I don't know where this shit is coming from.
Look at his face. It's so good. Right behind him with a golf club, so he just feels the energy. And then it's just like his relief as he realizes how stupid that was.
Yeah.
It's so perfect.
It would have been crazy for you to bash my head in with a golf club in the middle of the day. You're right.
You're right. You are the chief of police.
I feel like that speaks to how great he is as an actor, though, because he, to me, has always been such a like commanding presence.
Yes.
For you to look scared with cheekbones that hard takes so much work. And he looks like I've never seen him look like puppy doggish before.
Yeah.
Like I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's so good. It's so funny. And of course, at the end of the episode, it turns out that Burrell does get shit canned and Daniels takes on the deputy ops position. And then they move up Rawls to the commissioner and temporarily anyways. But I like that at the end, he's just like sitting. He's sitting in the office and he's like taking a phone call. He's like, no, he's upstairs. Now I'm deputy ops. Pretty yeah. great. But the scene that I love with the Sun Papers was when Gus is like, he's doing the translation of the press conference and then his like, I don't know, his one of his bosses tells him to stop swearing so much.
Yeah. There's a lot of subtle nuances in this episode with the newspaper stuff that, like Vince said, I want to see where it goes. Cause it's like, they're yeah. clearly trying to push him out. They like that other guy. I mm-hmm. don't know if he made up the stuff for his story that they did like. And the old guy was like, I like this kind of writing better, even though it's not fact checked. And I'm like,
right.
all of this is going somewhere and I yes. don't like the way it feels.
Yeah. Yeah. And you are correct to not like the way it feels, because it's gonna go bad. Yeah, here's that scene.
We worked closely together then, and when I became mayor, we formed a strong relationship.
He feared and hated me, and I merely wanted him dead. It took a while, but I finally put his ass out to pasture.
How much of that insight and analysis can we get in tomorrow's story?
Little to none. Twig was the man who could work the department sources, and they're the ones that would shit all over a dog and pony show like that. No, a veteran in the cop shop is what gets us over in a story like this, and fuck if we didn't buy ours out.
Gus, I understand that you're disappointed with the cutbacks, but civility is important. I've been meaning to talk to you about your profanity.
My profanity?
A collegial atmosphere is essential.
Collegial? I fucking failed out of journalism school. What the fuck do collegial mean?
I'm glad Jesse Pinkman killed him.
I love the, yeah, that just like that shitty middle manager move where, you know, like he gets shit on for a dumb business decision and he's like, oh, well, how can I get this guy? I know.
Yeah.
I'll point to some obscure point in the company handbook that he's
right,
not adhering
exactly.
to.
Yeah.
As you know from section C-1,
yeah, swearing is illegal here at the Sun. Yeah, he's being a little PAB as well. And like, you know, yeah, it's not looking good for what's going to happen soon, you know, at the Sun. But shit's going to get crazy in the next episode.
Oh, snap.
And the episode after that over at the Sun. But yeah, to close it out, fucking Freeman and Jimmy bite a homeless guy and and fucking what else happens? Oh yeah,
Clay Kima Davis goes to visit her old son.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, that was another note I had. Why are all the children nonverbal in this
yeah.
show?
Well,
like no one under the age of 10 speaks. They all just take in trauma silently.
Yeah. Yeah,
until a black woman hugs them.
Yes, yes. No, it is like it is kind of crazy. Like number one, watching this scene now, the one where Kim clearly traumatized kid, like not talking and whatnot. Watching that scene now as a dad, I'm like, I'm gonna cry.
Aww.
I don't like it. It makes me too sad. And then, but I also it made me very much appreciate that moment where she's like calling up you know Cheryl her ex and being like, can I see our kid please?
Yeah.
And then like spending time with him, like I was like, oh, this is very, I like this. This is nice. This is
I
nice
know.
But yeah, all the kids are fucked up. Like
they're super fucked up.
Yeah, it is not a great place to be. What else happens? Oh yeah, Bond. So Freeman, you know, finds this thing called the headshot. Basically, they now have like a foolproof way of getting Clay Davis on federal charges, and the
he cracks me up.
Who does Freeman?
Clay Davis. Whenever he's caught, and so is this when Donnell for like half a second is just like, we going to jail.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He just
yeah.
Yell.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that, but I specifically like just to speak on how good the actor is. It Isaiah Whitmore?
Yeah, Isaiah Whitlock.
Whitlock is at playing this character. After he like goes into the grand jury and is just like, you know, you're out for blood. He has got like this look on his face of like death. And then he steps out into the court steps and he immediately sees the cameras and he just like his politician brain turns on. It is like
huckster mode activated.
Yeah, huckster mode activated. It's so perfect. I had to get a clip of it. Senator, just look at this.
Jane, I insisted that I be called.
Senator, it's our understanding that you're the target of an investigation into theft and fraud.
No, pardon, no.
Yo, that head down, yes. Up, I did not see that before.
It's
yowza.
So good. I gotta play it again. It's so, look at this shit. Look at this. Down.
And smile.
Is it true that you...
Psycho shit.
That was good.
Like, he's played this character perfectly from the first episode that he's been on. Like, I remember Clay Davis, season one, he does the most insane, like, code switch ever, where the first time you see him, he's very much talking like this. He's like, you know, high, and you're just like, oh, you know, he's a politician. And then as soon as he's just like, he gets hood on, I think, like, on Daniels, just like, can you tell this motherfucker? And it's just like, oh, shit, this is a, it's just, Isaiah Whitlock, love you. Yeah. You're so good.
Great work.
Great work.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this whole time you're sort of watching this and you're expecting like this whole prosecution to come to nothing, right? Like that's...
Yeah.
I mean, not
that feels
me.
Like what they're setting up for
yes.
You know, because Bond doesn't...
I've been wondering if it was going to amount to nothing.
I remember watching it thinking... They got him, right? You know, like I was like pretty sure because I was like, if you have like the evidence and stuff, like, don't you got him? And but yeah, they are at this point setting it up. So you're just not sure what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But at this point in this you know, season, you're like, I'm pretty sure he's going down.
Yeah.
We'll see if he actually goes down in the next few episodes of The Wire. Last final thoughts, favorite scene, least favorite scene, something I missed, Vince.
I mean, we talked about my favorite scene. It's when, Herc decides to be, he has a change of heart and he realizes that he's been bad and he and Carve are, his friendship with Carve allows him to, see that he's been a bad cop and he salutes him. And I love that scene.
That's very nice. Katrina, the scene, least favorite or most favorite or something we missed that you wanted to talk about in your notes?
The one thing I had was I love that fret has worked its way into the everyday jargon of drug culture.
Yeah.
Multiple people say fret and I'm into it. And then also McNulty goes home like once a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He yeah. shows yeah. up
That's right.
and his hot wife is like, you smell like Listerine and Jameson. And yeah. then I was just like, why are you even here? Like every yeah. time yeah. he goes back, I'm like, where have you been sleeping? Like I have right. so many questions oh. every time they show his family.
There's also the scene in the bar where the girls, he's got girls looking at his badge, which is great.
Yes!
Like he clearly There's pulled it out and I was like, oh, you want to see my badge?
Every time. These past two especially, there have been women at bars that are, he's like, it's centimeters away from them or like weeble wobbling mid makeout. And it's like, yeah. but they never look drunk as him. Where yeah, it's like, yeah. if I was that sober, I'd be like, this guy's going to throw up in my mouth. Like, why are all of these women so into this? But that would, yeah, that would be my one scene we didn't talk about is McNulty yeah. being shithoused and still getting like, tons of play for whatever yes. reason.
This dude, he is a straight pussy magnet. He can't help himself but to fuck. And the scene with Beatty was really good just because it was very, like, I wish they had both had like thick Irish accents. You know, it was like, well, he's like, I'm chasing a serial killer. Oh, that's not all you're chasing. yeah. You're chasing drinks. You need to find Jesus. Like, there's, I don't know, there's something about that scene that was very, like an old time Irish play. But yeah, it was very good. And it's a great episode. If I had to give it a letter grade, and I do, I give it a B plus. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Yeah, tough to judge. You know, we say a B is 80 to 89%.
That's what a B is.
I would say this episode is a solid like 88.5. Therefore I'm gonna give it a solid B plus.
You're gonna give it a B plus. And Katrina Davis, what did you give this episode? Yeah, you go to letter grade.
Wait, is this is the one where we get to see Omar get the message at his island hideout?
No, that was the episode before. This is the one where Slim Charles gets spared. His life gets spared.
Yeah. That's when he pistol whips in the back of the head. Yeah, that's what it was. Because I was gonna give it a B for Bahamas, but I give it a B plus. Anyway, I give it a B plus for backhanding him in the back of the head with that pistol, but sparing his life.
Sparing his life. That's where the plus comes from. So it's a solid B plus episode of The Wire and a solid A plus episode of Pod Yourself The Wire. Katrina Davis, thank you so much for coming on
and
talking about The Wire
me.
With us. Yeah, where can people find you?
You can find me at Katrina Savad. It's Katrina with a K and then SIVAD. It's just Davis backwards. And that's my website and all the places that you find people. And I moved to New York. So if you live in New York, follow me and I tell jokes
on the
Brooklyn
street
a bunch.
Walk around.
Follow me on the street.
Honestly, I'm probably lost. So if you follow me, you're going to double back. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. Follow her on the social medias. She's got dates in New York. She's in April, got some dates in L.A.
Yeah, I'll be in L.A. in a little bit, but yeah.
So please follow. And once again, Katrina, thank you so much for coming on Pod Yourself The Wire.
Thank you.
Wires. The Wire.
Patreon.com/Rockcast. Yeah. $8 tier gets you a shout out and a street name. So, Vince, we have seven. So many. We're starting.
It's going to be diminishing returns, but I'll do my best.
No, I bet they get better. First is William Harrigan.
Harrigan? Call this guy two times.
Love it. Again. Then there is KM Dwyer.
I don't know what the KM stands for.
Kill me.
Is it kill me? I was thinking kilometer. We call him the system because short for the metric system.
I like that. The system's a good ass name. Next is Rachel K.
Rachel K, Special K. This is Special K. He's just gonna make you disassociate.
Oh, so you're calling them Special K?
Yep.
I love it. 1 degree, not two, but one. Sherman Lacey.
Sherman Tank in a Lacey bra. We call...
I love watching you do associations so much. Like, seeing the sausage get made is my favorite. Sherman Tank, Lacey Bra,
man fashioning
tank,
canoe
tank
out of a tree.
All right, so what is it? Oh boy!
Do I go with the tank or the bra?
Yeah, combine them.
Tank bra.
Okay, tank bra. Very good. Catherine O'Flattery.
I don't think that's how you pronounce that.
Oh, O'Flattery.
What? It's Flaherty, isn't it?
I don't know how to fucking speak Irish.
Yeah.
Catherine O'Flattery.
O'Fraudery. We call her O'Fraudery.
Oh, I like it. Catherine O'Fraudery. Two more. Chris Meighen. M-E-I-G-H-E-N.
The Meighen. Call this guy Chickens.
Love it.
He's a Meighen. I don't know.
Very good. No, it's good. And finally, Amber S.
Call Amber? That's a color, right? We call her Mellow Yellow.
Oh, I love that. All of those wonderful street names could be yours. at patreon.com/fraudcast, the $8 tier. Thank you to everyone who signed up. We have a bunch more, obviously, and we're going to get to them. And then, once again, if it's taken a while and you're like, it's been months, what the fuck? Just email us. And email us for anything. Questions, comments, concerns. Patreon. Oops, sorry. Fraudcast@gmail.com. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss. Shit. Do that bitch.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.